The Rice and Ricky Sanchez podcast is presented by DraftKings Sportsbook. Sign up for DraftKings Sportsbook by using promo code RTRS and is brought to you by SeatGeek. Get $20 off your first order with promo code RTRS. Big Barker Dog Beds. Get yours at bigbarker.com/Ricky. Kornblau and Kornblau, the official law firm of the process. And Stateside Urban Craft Vodka, the official sponsor of the Corner 3 newsletter, statesidevodka.com. Special shout out to Clement from Stateside Vodka, who seems to go to every Sixers game and is always bummed out about three quarters of the way through the game. I always get that bummed out text. On the show today, Sixers beat the Bulls. Sixers have a stunning win over the Blazers. Sixers still have one of the top-ranked offenses in the NBA. Everything's all right. After a quiet 10 days or so, the Simo the Savage situation heats up a bit again, and there's a new story we hadn't had in a while, and I believe it is official, we can name it, the most annoying of all of the process soap operas we've gone through. We head into the mailbag also once again to ask the question that everybody's asking, was cheering for Damian Lillard when he was here loser shit? That is the question. Before we get going, we're going to send a congratulations. Got an email from Joe. And Joe is like, you know what? I love my friend, my best friend, Joe. And my best friend, Joe, is marrying his fiance, Nora, this week. And it's a tough time. I'm a student. I'm not going to be able to get them anything nice. But we bonded. We came together over this. We became friends over this podcast. CJ and his friend group chuckling over that one. He wanted to wish his friend, Joe, and Nora, a very happy wedding. They actually went to fly the process together. Joe and Nora did, have been to a bunch of Ricky events. So we want to wish a very big congratulations to Joe and Nora who are getting married this week. Joe, that is from your best friend, also named Joe.
Yeah, who's not going to pay for anything. So he's making us deliver this big, fancy, free message. That's right. Yeah. That's fair. We'll say fine.
We'll send you the invoice for that one.
But the presents from us.
Yes. Yeah. Without any further ado, Amos and the Chef are back.
Larry, sweetie, the man is here.
Say the name. I say the name. I say the name.
We will write y'all.
I'll tell you what, speaking of Say the Name, we have a bit of a controversy about that coming up later. Very big controversy. Welcome to the Rice and Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin, along with a guy who is still sorting through his leftover pieces of dark chocolate from Halloween. That is our very own Mike Levin.
What a game.
Yeah.
What a couple of games. What a several stretch of games this has been for our very strange, but good, seemingly for now, Sixers.
Six and two, 76ers, right?
Six and two. For a while, it was, you know, they didn't have any good wins, but then Atlanta, then Portland without anybody, and then Chicago without Tobias and without Danny.
Yeah. Not bad.
And these are good wins. These are good, solid early season wins against good teams that had given them trouble before. And I mean, it's that the Blazers win was one of the nicest wins regular season wise that we've ever had.
I would say a delight that win was, you know,
total
that
delight.
Not expecting it, no pressure, come in, just fucking, wow, look at this, you know, total delight, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, obviously Seth Curry has been hot for the whole season. And shooting very well from three. He's shooting over 50% from three still, and we're eight games into the season. But it's not just the three-point shooting. Like, he gets to his spots slowly and hesitantly, but he gets there, and he's one of the best like shooting scorers I've ever seen. Like, not obviously doesn't get to the rim too much, but he can hit such a wide variety of shots. And also when he's wide open, he might be the most automatic 3-point shooter in the league.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's that good at scoring the basketball in a variety of ways with his jump shot. And sometimes he just like doesn't feel like it.
Yeah.
It's incredibly strange. And I like him for it a lot. I wish I could say relatable, but it's not relatable. To me, it's not relatable at all.
Hit a big one tonight, man. A big one tonight.
That is a ridiculous shot. He's listed. What are you listing at? 6'2"? That's a lot. Whatever it is, it's a lie. He's barely 6 foot. I would guess we are the same size. And for him to hit that over Crusoe, who's pretty big, pretty long, and
a good defender.
And a very good defender. And he's like, he picked up his dribble and like the ball was kind of loose and he almost lost it going like to his right, which is a tougher angle to go to. And he just hit a really, really tough shot in a huge part of the game. He's incredible. He's unbelievable. He's really, really good. And it's amazing how many teams just like didn't buy it. Like he went undrafted, pretty sure, went undrafted out of Liberty, then transferred to Duke. Like this is his first team. I don't know if you talked about this. The first team where he's been on the same team 2 years in a row in his career.
It's wild.
And like, all well, also while,
he's gotten better, you know, probably.
He's definitely gotten better as a shooter and a scorer. And I think in regular season, I think his defense holds up enough to not be like, get off the court. It's not for lack of trying for the most part. Like, he comes up with steals. He's got good hands.
Just slow-footed.
He's just slow-footed and very, very small. But yeah. It's amazing how many teams, and he's getting paid $8 million, which is very little in this league. I replied to Matt Carey the other day that Korkmaz and Niang were underpaid, should be getting paid like three times as much. But like, so should Seth. Seth should be getting at least twice as much. And it's remarkable that he's not.
I wonder where they deals could on this team. Find. They could find. I wonder if there's somewhere on the team they could find tens of millions of dollars that are being spent on nothing that maybe they could redistribute to those three players.
Brand management.
maybe that's what it is. I don't know.
Can Tad find it?
Well, I don't know. I don't. There might be. Maybe somewhere they're spending that money. All right, let's get into the game a little bit. Before we do, the Apple Podcast 5-star review, we're at 2,944, closing in on 3,000. This comes from Willman408. I came for the Sixers analysis. I stayed for Brian Windhorst slander. Like that. We want to send our best wishes, obviously, to Tobias Harris, who Doc mostly confirmed is, you know, has COVID and is not doing great. You know, I think he's fine, but he's struggling more with it than some of the other players did. So I want to send our love to Tobias Harris and get back soon. And Danny Green, who a little less worrisome, but from a basketball perspective, a old guy with a hammy, not great, you know, not great. You know, they were talking about maybe missing him for a couple of games. He's not going to play for a couple of weeks. That would be my guess if he's got a hamstring. You know, you want to let that. So I thought
which is fine. Again, let's take caution. We're going to need who knows what the team's going to look like after the deadline. But like, if Danny is a factor in this team for the playoffs, like we're going to need him healthy and keep those hamstrings fresh. So let's take him out for a while. Get into a nice new series, Dan. Have you watched anything in a while? Sit down.
It was an interesting game, especially when you look at the, you know, you look at the box score or whatever. You know, Seth came out pretty hot. I thought Furk had a really strong game, even though the stats don't, you know, I was looking at plus minus. He was like minus 18 at one point. Thibault had a great game. I thought it was a gutty game from Embiid. Really, that was that. What really stuck out to me is that the shot wasn't really falling. He was missing a bunch of free throws. Mm-hmm. I thought physically he looked pretty good. He was setting a lot of screens early, and I thought he was pretty active. But it felt like one of those games where down the stretch, Embiid would have like sulked and disappeared. And I thought him sort of coming through with a couple of tough buckets and that block on DeRozan and then forcing fucking Doc Rivers to call the challenge at the end. Like, I thought it was a gutty performance in the last 5 minutes of the game from Joel.
Yeah. Definitely didn't play his best basketball on the offensive end, especially shooting the ball. You know, it doesn't seem like he's quite comfortable. There were a couple times when he got a good amount of lift on his shot, but it's for some reason, just like not making some of the shots that he normally makes, but still really good. I thought his passing was really nice tonight. Hitting shooters, like if they're going to double him, they're going to keep doubling him. We talked about it extensively on the last podcast, which I thought I haven't heard other people talking about that much. It's like, you shouldn't be doubling him. Like, he's one of the best players in the league, one of the best offensive, certainly one of the best post players in the league. But like, still, you should just force him to take like contested step backs, and rather than like giving Korkmaz or Seth or whatever open threes, but they're still doing it and he's happy to do it. I wouldn't mind doubling him like on a spin move or something, or if he's something like that. But when he can see you, it seems like there's no point in doing that. Anyway, he's doing
a
good job.
I would, by the way, I wouldn't double him right away. Like, I would let him prove that if I'm going to double him, I'd certainly let him hit a couple of buckets first and let him prove that he's going to dominate whoever's sure. down there.
But again, I'm happy for them to do it. And I think he should be happy for them to do it. I think mm-hmm. he should. There was one time late in the game. So he's passed the ball while he had 7 assists. I thought there was a really nice pass to Matisse in the dunker spot. That was a big play late that Matisse got a dunk out of. There was one play where Embiid spun away from the double team, had Seth open for a three, and it just felt like Embiid was doing a little bit of like, George Niang was getting MVP chance. Seth Curry is like icing the game in some stretches. Like, I need, like, I felt like a burning desire to be like, I need to be the guy that hits a shot at the end to like seal the game. And it's tough to do that as a big guy. It's tough to do that when you're not, you know, you don't have a great feel for your shot, which Embiid at this point kind of doesn't right now. 6-for-18 from the field, like that's obviously terrible for him. But he had Seth open, he didn't make the pass. But I mean, the thing that Embiid has, like, especially without Ben on this team, Embiid just has to anchor the defense, and he's looked excellent on defense. I thought he's moved a lot better. I thought he blitzes pick and rolls really nicely. I thought he hedges. I thought he hasn't given up too many like lobs behind him, which has been an issue in the past, just because he's trying to play up on guards. That obviously, the pick and roll game is such like a moving parts. It's like the most moving parts thing in basketball, where like everyone's trying to do things at once and limiting things and trying to like get around screens and also help, but not help too much and all that stuff. I think Embiid looked great doing it. That block on DeMar at the end was just unbelievable. And he knew it right away. And I love when he knows it and he's right. It's a really great feeling. And against a tough matchup in Vucevic. Obviously, Vuce is having a tough season shooting the ball right now, 2-for-7. That's like just not who he is. But he's a stretch five, and those kinds of players have given Embiid tough time in the past. And I thought Embiid did a good job of playing up on him, not giving him easy open looks while also still helping and recovering and all that stuff. He looks very spry defensively, even as offensively, he looks not quite himself.
I'm having a hard time with Niang. Let me explain why.
Okay.
Just
I'm
let
upset.
Me.
I'm already upset.
That's why I'm asking for your help. I'm asking for your help. Obviously, a great game against Portland, mm-hmm. A great game again tonight against Chicago. Has shot incredibly well, has playmade very well.
But not unsustainably well. Early 40, low 40%. Like, that's what he does.
Sure.
And shooting on the highest volume of the team, by the way, per 36. Highest volume.
But I watch him, and I just have this feeling like he's just going to get... Maybe I just need to enjoy the now. I get the feeling he's just going to get obliterated in the playoffs.
Like on what end?
Defensively. He's just so slow, like slow-footed, and he can't play center. And like I feel like we're not going to be able to make up for him, you know? I don't know.
But you don't feel that with Seth? You don't feel that way with Seth?
I don't. Not like I do with Niang. Not as much as I do with Niang, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty clear that Niang is a better defensive player than Seth. I think he's switchable on more guys. He's certainly slow-footed, but he's really smart. He's hard to move. He's physical, and he gets his hands on a lot of balls and just like makes some stuff happen. He switched onto Levine late and forced Levine to pass it up. Like, he hasn't been. I hear the concern. Like, obviously, anybody that's slow-footed and not crazy long defensively is going to be susceptible to deep in the playoffs. But like, he's a smart player and he's not small. So I think like that's at least some of it. And I, you know, to your point on, we'll get to the offense in a second, but to the point on the, on, you know, a couple pods ago, I think I was saying, man, it sucks that Doc is finally, you know, at least occasionally committing to no center lineups out there, mm-hmm. just finding different looks at it. And I was like pissed about it because I was like, to do it without Ben out there is really aggravating to me. But let's not look in the past. Let's look forward. I've been asking for it all off season and during the season, and he's doing it. And so I have to give him credit, even though, like, you know, the personnel isn't exactly ideal. And I think it is a different kind of look against a team like Portland, where it's Larry Nance. Obviously, Larry Nance is not a threat to post up five times in a row, so Niang can cover him. That's like a fine thing. Tobias can cover him, whatever it is. So I'm grateful that it's happening. I think it looks good. I think it looks certainly interesting. Over the course of a full season, will the numbers bear it out? I don't know. Will it be a reliable strategy in the playoffs? I think it'll be matchup dependent. Will you want to go away from Andre Drummond when he's doing well? Probably not, but tonight Andre Drummond was really bad. And so it's good to have other options and to throw, especially in a playoff series when every single play is so over scrutinized and everything could swing a series. So I'm happy. Not a huge Doc guy, not like the biggest anti-Doc guy. I'm just sort of, I'd say like a little bit below average on Doc compared to the national.
Doc centrist?
I don't think I'm a Doc centrist. I think I'm lower than most, but not okay. Like not the lowest.
Because there's a lot of people that like hate him
for sure.
Yeah,
and I get frustrated by him, but I don't think it's worse personally. But Niang, man, like I'm happy that they're giving him some options, playing some center with Tobias. But like the offense is just incredible. It really is. Like I was very high on it coming into the season, because he was the focal point of offense at Iowa State, and then like made his way on an NBA team and stuck at Utah, and was just like, I'm a good shooter and I sit here and I shoot off the catch. And Quinn Snyder's offense was very like pick and roll, spread, stand there. Bojan Bogdanović, stand there. Niang, stand there. When Joe Ingles is off ball, stand there. And obviously Clarkson and Donovan Mitchell running pick and rolls with Gobert. But like there was just always something else there, and didn't get to show in Utah. And I'm really happy that he's getting to show it here, because he can pass. He can shoot in the mid-range a little bit. He can finish. He finished through contact like four times against the Blazers. He's just really, really good. He's just a really, really good player. He had 18 points tonight. I think he had about 18 the other night in Portland. It was just like just really, really helpful. You doing grapes?
No. I'm sorry. I'm playing with this.
Okay. I thought it would have been a solid grape bit if you were doing
it. No grapes. No grapes. Sorry. I didn't know it was that loud. I'm sorry.
But I just like... He's just really, really helpful. He's always making the right decision. He's always under control. And I think because they had an Ingles type that was the third guy outside of Clarkson and Donovan Mitchell at Utah, I think, and Mike Conley, I think they didn't need him to do that. But I always thought he was capable, and I love seeing him do it. And he's just balanced, and he gets a shot off quick, and he shoots it high. He's not he doesn't like pump and go just to restart the offense. Like he does it with a point. He knows how slow he is, and he works to like make quick decisions to like mitigate his lack of foot speed. He's balanced. He's great. I think the problem with the Sixers that is slightly frustrating: Niang, Korkmaz, Seth, yeah. Shake.
Yep.
They're all so slow. Yeah. They're so slow. They have such limited burst. Even Tobias sometimes. I think the height of his burst is good, but I think a lot of times he's a little slow or methodical is maybe a better way to say it. And there's just so many guys. It's only Maxey that can like really like get burst off of his first step or get by a guy. And they have they're obviously most of those guys, all those guys are shooters, so that they can, you know, use the defense's momentum against them and they get by him and the team's passing really well, all that stuff. But like, you can see how frustrating this team is. The frustrated the team is when they are pressured, and that was every Chicago. Obviously, Chicago a good fast break team, but every single run from the Bulls in the second half stemmed from ball pressure.
Yeah,
and the whole Sixers team getting sped up, except for Tyrese. He's the only guy that can handle it, that can, you know, that doesn't get either sped up or bothered or rattled or everything. Like Korkmaz has done that a bunch of times. Shake does that sometimes. Even Seth a couple times, him and Embiid got their wires crossed. Niang obviously isn't very fast. So it's just like, I wish one of those guys was just like a little bit faster so that there's some burst. But so like, honestly, is one of them expendable in a way that we can get somebody fast in here to just like give it a little more change of pace when Maxie's not in? I don't know. But that's the thing. That's one of the things they miss most about Ben is there's just not that many fast guys on the team.
Mike, did you know your butt has a favorite app? It's SeatGeek. It's SeatGeek. It's a SeatGeek app.
That's right.
People are getting out there. You know, we were talking about War on Drugs. We had they're not our intro music anymore, but they are going on tour. They are playing. So SeatGeek is where you get your tickets for anything, for concerts, for sporting events, for comedy, whatever, SeatGeek. I actually Googled tickets earlier today. I was helping my wife out with something and I Googled an event and the first 8 results, I was like, what the fuck ticket site is that? And then I remember, just go to SeatGeek because it takes all those places and puts them in one easy to like navigate thing. So War on Drugs is playing Madison Square Garden, which is fucking incredible. They're playing 2 nights at the Metro in Philly, by the way. One night at Madison Square Garden, January 29th. And I go into SeatGeek and I see I can get into the War on Drugs show for $38 a ticket. And it rates that deal. Now it's upper level. It rates that deal as a 9.7, an amazing deal. It scores the deals from 1 to 10. It gives them a color code as well in case you're anti-number. Red is not a great deal. Dark green is a great deal. SeatGeek, it's truly the only app you need to buy tickets. That's it. There is a reason. It's got over 50,000 five-star ratings on the App Store. SeatGeek. Here's the deal too. If you haven't used it before, thanks to us, use promo code RTRS, you get $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase. That's right. So if you go to see War on Drugs at Madison Square Garden and use SeatGeek and get those $38 tickets and get 2 of them and use that $20 off, it's almost like you're going for free. SeatGeek. Get your seat in a seat. Download the app today. SeatGeek, promo code RTRS.
Quick thing about Korkmaz, you brought him up.
Yeah, love him. Best perimeter guy with the ball on the team.
He's incredible, and I love him, and he's special. I want to talk. I've talked for probably 3 years now about like his defense actually looks better, and he's actually improving. And I think that
has a lot of deflections
borne out over. I think he's gotten better each season. They had him on. You know, obviously it's because Ben's not there, and Danny's not there, and Tobias is not there even. So they had him on starting and on DeMar DeRozan at the beginning of the game, which is difficult for anybody, especially for Korkmaz. Matisse was on Levine. Matisse gives Levine a tough time. I probably would have rather had Maxi on Levine at least to speed him up a little bit and Matisse on DeRozan, but there's no great options there. So he's on first play of the game. I think it was the first play of the game. Korkmaz gets absolutely roasted for a reverse dunk by DeRozan, as in DeRozan is insulted by Doc putting Furkan Korkmaz on him, especially DeRozan's playing well right now. So I get it. Next possession, Korkmaz nails a 3. I think that took like a level of, consciousness less. One of them.
One more.
But no, I'm gonna bail. Okay. But I like seeing that. And then later in the quarter, DeRozan's got Korkmaz in the post, absorbs contact, and recovers to block the jumper fadeaway that DeRozan's hit over everybody in the world. And I just think that's a ball. Those are ballsy sequences to be able to get punched in the mouth by a guy as physical and as hot right now as DeRozan. And it's a tough assignment, and to not just like wilt. I think honestly, earlier in Korkmaz's career, he would have like done some, he would have expected to be pulled from the game probably. Mm-hmm. He would have done some like moping around the court a little, and he probably would have like he would have picked him up. And I just want to, I'm watching the game and seeing him like take the hit and being like, okay, and go from there. And that's awesome. And then he has also the reverse dunk on transition, which I love. That's like his finishing move. I think that's like his rock bottom. And then like the behind the back pass is like his secondary move to hype the crowd up. So it's like the behind the back pass, like a people's elbow type of thing. Like it's a little bit stupid, but it's fun for people to do. I love him and he's great. And I'm always happy when Korkmaz gets a start. It feels like it's validating for him. He's the second most longest tenured player on the team. I mean, he's doing great. Everybody loves Korkmaz. He looks hot as hell in those new jerseys. Doing great. Just thriving.
Hasn't had a haircut in months. Months. He's growing that shit out. That is going to be, that's just going to be out to here in a month. It's going to be great. Yeah. I don't know what else I have from the game itself. Do you? I mean, I'm sure you have a fucking
list. Oh, I got it. Come on. Yeah. I thought it was a great Matisse game. Great Matisse.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I said that.
I mean, that's right. Those two guys are going to score. DeRozan's incredible at getting to his spots and having great touch when he gets there. It's really, really hard. He's such a crafty player. He's better than he was in Toronto. He gets to the line now. He shoots threes sometimes. He passes really well. He's just a really, really good player. And obviously Levine is Levine. He's sometimes too fast, too athletic, too good of a shooter, whatever. All you can do is make it tough on him. And he just does all the time. Three steals, two blocks, coming from nowhere. I think his motor doesn't get discussed enough. To not only recover on his guys, but also out of nowhere on like rotations. I think he blocked a Tony Bradley like layup basically. I don't know what else you can say about his playmaking on defense. It is fully unique. There's not anyone like him. And on a game when he hits two threes, like, and had a nice assist to Maxey on a fast break, 2-on-1 opportunity. It's just like, love him. Great. Just, you need like, I'm very interested to see what his game looks like in 5 years. And I don't know. I'm obviously more optimistic about the offense than most.
Probably like, exactly the same.
But if it's the same, then that means he's a defensive player of the year candidate for every year. And that's incredible. Yeah. I mean, we've talked about his positioning and stuff. And there's sometimes when he's not the one-on-one guy you want him to be. But you take it. I take it. 10 times out of 10, I'll take that because he makes those plays that no one else could make. It's unbelievable.
I think he's incredibly exciting to watch. It's going to be such a bummer to me if he can never just become a good three-point shooter, like a solid, dependable three-point shooter, because it will turn him into like a Danny Green, like length of career. Like, he'll be able to stay on the court for 37 minutes if he can do that. And I just don't think he can right now, but he's that away. Like, that's what he is away. And I wonder, I'm curious about him as a like work ethic thing. Like, I wonder what his work ethic is over the summer, because so much of what he has is like, obviously instinctual. I'm not saying he doesn't learn it, but it doesn't seem like it is instinct. Like, he just has this sense of him. And I'm curious to know what he concentrated on the off season, because he's mid 20s now, and there's still not much of an offensive game there. So I would just love for him to be able to be a consistent shoot it when it's open 3-point shooter, and because I think it changes his entire career.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a swing skill for so many guys. And I think right now he looks confident doing it. I think last year as a rookie it was fine, a little pretty slow. I think last year you could really see him getting in his head about it and hesitating, and guys playing off him, and him just like not wanting to do it and sometimes making the wrong call. Right now he is shooting like, I'm confident and good to do this. And sometimes it goes in, sometimes it doesn't. He had 2 or 3 tonight. It feels like such a momentum swing when his threes go in. Like, the team really rallies behind it because everyone's happy. But the thing I also would love for him to focus on is defensive rebounding. Team's not a good defensive rebounding team. It's 3 games in a row where they've let up a good deal of offensive rebounds. Embiid's not at his strength without Tobias, without Ben. Drummond is hit or miss as a defensive rebounder. We've talked about it. He gets rebounds, but the team is not a good rebounding team because of him. It'd be nice if Matisse used his length and athleticism to like put a body on guys and go get the ball a lot more, because there's too many second chance opportunities for the other team. I mean, and that's one of the things with Ben. Like, so the a quick Ben-less state of the team. The defense looks better than I thought it would. Absolutely. Defense looks better. I think there's times when, like, obviously if Ben was there tonight, he would have been on DeRozan, and he's just not, and Danny's not also at this point. So it makes it harder. You're going to get beat sometimes. But the defense as a whole, I think, looks like together and cohesive. And I think with Joel anchoring it as well as he's playing, it helps a lot.
As of right now, they're 12th in the NBA in defensive rating, which is
with Ben, it would be better, but
yeah, well, obviously
it's totally fine for now. I think another one of my other big concerns was passing the ball, and they still don't have many great passers or any really. It's probably Korkmaz is probably the best passer, and him and Drummond at least make the most risky passes. I don't know if they're the best, but they're capable of making very good passes, and sometimes they try to fit things in that shouldn't. But I thought the passing as a team looks pretty excellent. Just moving the ball, finding shooters, kicking out, driving a couple lobs here and there. Danny had a nice lob to Drummond in the Blazers game. A couple of those things are nice. But the rebounding is way worse and an issue, and the pace is worse, and the ball handling is problematic when Maxey's not on the court.
And they still have, by the way, the number one offense in the NBA.
Yeah.
Still.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, right now I think that's due to how many great shooters on the team, including free throw percentage. Prior to this game, I don't know if it's updated yet, but prior to this game,
Imagine everyone
on the team was shooting over 80% from the line.
Yeah.
Even Matisse and Drummond, which is wild. Obviously only a couple games, but it's still like when you hit your foul shots, you get, you know, those are free points and the offense looks good because of it. But I struggle to see, as we've seen in a lot of stuff. I thought Shea looked pretty good tonight, getting that middle distance and stuff, but because they don't have many guys that can just get by one guy, there's so much dependent on like dribble handoff, swing, dribble handoff, swing.
Well, this is the last 4 years, you know?
For sure. Fitting in tight window, like just not enough like bread and butter, easy looks where like guys have space and control. It feels like once the defense really starts to lock in, it feels like they can't do much with it. And Seth has been hitting shots for sure. And Maxey gets to the rim. And I love watching Maxey get to the rim and turn the corner. You can't say enough about his ball handling and energy and burst and everything. But I just feel like I look, number one offense, 8 games in, love it. Great shooters. Love them. Very excited. But there's still significant piece missing on this team. And whether it ends up being Ben fills some of that role, or they move Ben, or they trade one of the guys that's slow and good at other stuff for a guy that's maybe faster and not good at some other stuff, I don't know. Maybe Grant Riller gets back and gives them a little burst off the bench. I don't know. It's good for now. We're happy. We're good. We're 6-2, beat some good teams.
Did you say maybe Grant Riller, didn't he tear his ACL?
Meniscus.
Oh, meniscus. Okay. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure.
Right. I'm sorry. By the way, the Sixers also number 3 in net rating in the NBA. And number 6 in assist to turnover ratio, which is also impressive, and number 1 in effective field goal percentage, number 1 in true shooting. Incredible, absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
Also incredible, Kornblau and Kornblau. I want to read you an email. Hey guys, just wanted to add to the growing list of glowing testimonials about the official law firm of the process, Kornblau and Kornblau. Recently, the rest was up to me. And I emailed Kornblau regarding an ongoing issue with my contractor refusing to reimburse my deposit for work he refused to complete. Fucking contractors, by the way. Within 15 minutes, I got a Kornblau to respond, and not just any Kornblau, the Kornblau. Adam called me to talk through the issue, share a few Sixers takes. He helped me craft my perfect message to the contractor, who upon receiving the message, bent the knee to Kornblau's mighty prose and impending legal wrath and returned my money within days. His advice to settle without going to small claims court was absolutely the right call. I'm forever grateful to Adam for talking me off the ledge and getting that Colangelo-esque rat contractor out of my life for good. Long live Kornblau. The best thing about Kornblau is that he's a personal injury lawyer and he spent the night on the phone doing that shit. Not making one penny. 40 years. The personal injury law firm's been there. All I can say is you're not getting a referral factory. When you call, when you email, like the emailer said, you're going to get Kornblau. And if you've been hurt in any way, injured at work, slip and fall, all those things, Kornblau is your guy. His mom is your woman. And the rest of them are all Kornblaus. Just, I'm telling you, that's who you got to go to. Give him a call or shoot him an email. Doesn't cost you anything. 215-576-7200. Ask for Adam. That is 215-576-7200. Ask for Adam. Or email Kornblau at kornblauandkornblau.com. Kornblau and Kornblau, the official law firm of the process. Congrats to the Sixers. 6-2. I don't think we ever saw that coming. They're starting to be, it was tough a few games ago. I felt like after the Detroit game, everything was just like a bit of a bummer. And these three wins have been really like nice. And I feel like put everybody in a pretty good spot, right?
It has been nice. They're not perfect, but without Tobias and Danny to give up a lead, not a crazy huge lead, but a bit of a lead to the Bulls, a good Bulls team is, it's not anything to be too ashamed of, but they battled and they fought and Matisse played 38 minutes, which is wild. I'm a little upset that B-Ball Paul didn't make the rotation. I would have loved to see a little B-Ball Paul and Embiid on the court at the same time. Like even giving B-Ball Paul like a chance at DeRozan just to give him some length, he would have gotten faked out of his pants on any pump fake for sure. But I would have liked to see it. I would like to see it. Now they're like, we're good. Like they're 6-2. I thought there was a real chance that if things went real south, and maybe it still could, obviously, early in the season, but I thought there was a chance they could have fallen into the play-in. They look good enough. It's still way early, but they look good enough to where it seems like they're going to be at least in that like 4-5 range, if not better, depending on trades and all that stuff. But I want Doc to continue to tinker with that second unit, with Embiid backup situation, living with Maxi mistakes, living with Isaiah Joe mistakes. He pulled Isaiah Joe too early tonight.
Yeah, and Joe hit the three and actually played good defense on LaVine. He got called for a foul, but I thought he competed in there a little bit.
I agree. Yeah. But there's stuff that, I mean, obviously Doc's going to see stuff that he did wrong that we won't see. But like, we got to be able to live with that stuff because Danny is going to be out for a little bit. Tobias can be out for a little bit. Like, we're going to have to count on some guys. Sometimes other guys aren't going to have it. Like as much as wins are nice, like I care more about like positioning ourselves and getting these guys ready for playoff series. And we got to be, especially Maxi, we got to be able to like let him make his mistakes and keep putting him out there and giving him the ball in big situations so he gets confident and figures it out and all that stuff. Cause he's maybe the most important player on the team to that.
So we got notified tonight via Twitter that there was an apparent Ricky listener competing on Jeopardy tonight. And we got notified that the lottery parties were mentioned. And of course, my first response is, well, did he say the name? And his name is Tyler, and I'm going to play for you his appearance on Jeopardy tonight. So Tyler went on Jeopardy, mentioned the lottery party, and did not say the name.
Yeah. When I saw that people said there's a guy, I thought he was like wearing a shirt and then it was just like never said it or something. But
no.
That's an egregious.
Yeah.
It's a relatively egregious avoidance of it. If you did like it's pretty close to a Sixers fans gathered. Like this guy and his dad invented the idea of driving down. Driving down where, Tyler?
Yeah, where'd you go? In fact, if he had said Sixers fans gathered, I think that would have been a nod to us.
That would have been a nod, yeah.
You know, that would have been a nod. Instead, he just chickened out. Tyler, you're banned. You're fucking banned. And you lost on Jeopardy.
He did?
I think so. I don't know. I didn't watch. I don't watch Jeopardy. But everyone said he lost. So, Tyler, your heart was in the right place, but that was a really just an atrocious performance from you. So loser, you didn't win, and you're fucking banned. That's how it happened. So there we go. So we have an update on the former Sixers starting point guard who has not played yet this season, who has requested a trade. The update brought to us by Stateside Urban Craft Vodka.
Because we need it.
Well, yeah.
I have a stateside story. Jason Lipschitz was in town. Billboard's Jason Lipschitz, and we went to see Tame Impala last night at the Hollywood Bowl.
Yeah,
a band I wasn't really all that familiar with.
Yeah.
And man, if as Jason brought up to me, they had a lot of the, you know, I asked the War on Drugs guys about the,
yeah,
the background shapes and stuff and colors, yeah, and flashy lights. Tame Impala's got a lot of those. That guy's working overtime. Whoever is doing it, no one knows, on whatever flashy lights and weird shapes and driving and, you know, like going down a hallway and shit. Very psychedelic.
How is that a stateside story?
Because Jason Lipschitz came to my house first, and I opened my fridge and gave, and it was like, do you want to try a stateside? And he said, I never had one. And I was like, well, have this one. And
the stateside
salsa. Vodka.
The soda.
It was vodka, soda. And it was, he had the black cherry, mm-hmm, and he liked it very much. He was very pleasantly surprised by how much he liked it.
Yeah, so. And the Black Label Bourbon is out now too. So, so stateside vodka to come. Okay, so there was a story from Ramona Shelbourne and Woj earlier this week that the Sixers were increasingly frustrated with the situation, the refusal to accept organizational assistance to address his mental readiness to play. Sources told ESPN. I love every time I see Ramona Shelbourne saying something and talking about frustration, I think to myself, who's frustrated? I wonder who mentioned that he was frustrated. And then Shams reports today that 76ers president Daryl Morey approached him about his return to game action, but he restated that he is not yet mentally ready to play and is continuing to seek professional help. There is no timetable on his return to the floor. And then Shams followed up with, hold on, I want to get the second tweet. Team officials have been supportive and have wanted to receive feedback on his process. The 76ers have not requested specifics about discussions with professionals, sources said. This is so annoying. It is horseshit. I actually feel bad for the fact that they have drugged, you know, like this entire time, there has never been like any sort of claim of an actual, like of any actual distress. All he said is that he's not mentally ready to play. So I don't fucking know. Obviously the Sixers are fed up with it. And the one thing I think you can say about Daryl is that Daryl is certainly conscious of public reaction and, you know, what the right thing is and what the wrong thing is. I think if Daryl did not like think that there was some sort of issue with this, they wouldn't be pushing it the way that they are. Boy, it's an annoying situation. And I just don't see the end of it. You know, David Murphy was tweeting today that he thought that the Sixers playing well helped their bargaining position. Like, I just look at it, everything feels the fucking same to me as it felt 3 weeks ago. You know, I don't think anyone's going to like, you know, whatever. I'm sorry.
I don't know about value wise. Who knows?
Yeah.
You know, a 6-2 start is different than a, you know, for other teams, I don't know. For Daryl, I think certainly not. I don't think it makes a difference to Daryl. Maybe other teams would have pounced more if we started off more poorly. This is weird. It's all weird. And it's again, I've been saying this whole time, because Ben hasn't made himself available to the public and like been vulnerable and say like what's actually going on. It is hard to know what it is that, you know, he's claiming to go through, what is prohibiting him from playing, what he's looking to figure out or whatever. On the one hand, like on his end of things, like, I get it. Why you wouldn't be like, I'm not going to like do the Sixers therapists. Like, I'm not going to like Sixers branded therapy.
I don't think that's their real problem.
No, for sure. No, yeah. I think I'm both sides of it is on, let's not say it's Ben specific, let's say anyone going like, your boss being like, hey, and how is therapy going? Are you going to come back soon? What's going on? That's like a weird thing to have a conversation about. I think there's probably something you can have that conversation through your agent maybe. But on the Sixers side, it's also like, hey, we gave you the space. We're supporting you. The other players led by Tobias are supporting you. Like what's it going to take? What is the return to play situation? And it's easy to get cynical and look at that and being like, is, you know, because of the how frequently the a clause has been cited of like, well, if you, you know,
yeah,
emotional, it's like it makes everybody into like very bad faith, like detective, mental health detectives. And it's just fucking weird. And it's all weird and it's all uncomfortable and nobody likes it. I get why the Sixers are like, what's their turn to action? And I am speculating because Ben again hasn't talked to anybody publicly about why I would also be like, yo, employer, like back the fuck up. But it's messy and weird and stupid, and it's the Sixers.
Well,
here come the Sixers.
But it's not, I'm certainly not, you know, team guy in any way. But it also followed up like 3 months of him and his agent like lighting shit on fire here and saying he was never going to play here again. He didn't care how much money it costed him. He didn't like none of that. And then just came back. And then as you said, that clause is mentioned very specifically in the articles written about it. And I don't know, the whole thing stinks, but I think if you're going to not play after doing all of that, and you're going to not play and continue to get paid, I don't know what they have told the team and what they haven't, but I do think they are owed some sort of like general progress report. Like nothing exact. I'm sure they're not like, what's the diagnosis? How many times did he sit in therapy? I can almost guarantee they're not doing that.
Sure.
But, you know, what's probably happening is he's coming in, he's getting treatment on his back, he's riding the exercise bike and he's leaving. And they're not hearing anything from anyone. And he's getting paid what he's paid. And it's just like, whatever. I just like fucking, I just want it to be over. Just get
it's all very, very bizarre and uncomfortable. Yeah. And it sucks. It's hard to imagine him being like, okay, cool, I'm ready to play. And Daryl being like, great. And Doc being like, you're starting. Like, it just seems like a very odd way to do it. And Maxie's been playing well. Would Ben like get sent down to the G League to get some time in? Would he come off the bench for at first because there's a minutes limit and because Maxie looks good and the starting lineup has some, I don't know. It's all very odd. But you know, we're used to odd. We were born in odd.
Man, this guy sucks. He just fucking sucks. I just can't wait till he's gone. And then the other thing that I think related, obviously, and we'll get to the chants later on in the mailbag, but the big article from Chris Haynes, was it? Yahoo? Just mm-hmm. about how much Damian Lillard is not going to leave Portland. It's just a hilarious story about him going to LeBron's house and they had dinner with a nice rosé wine. I think it said nice rosé. And it was like LeBron courting him or whatever. And that's when he decided he's not going to leave Portland or whatever. And he likes, what's his fuck, Chauncey Billups, and he wants to win there. And Giannis winning it's just not happening this year. You know, I think we should get that one out of our minds. And I was wrong about that. I thought this was 2 weeks and out, but it does not seem like that's the case, you know?
It was the kind of weird thing. Once they hired a new coach and then there was the very bizarre, like he like, because of Chauncey's sexual assault charge or claim against him, there was the like Dame kind of backpedaled on wanting him there, it seemed publicly, and it was like, I don't know, I don't want to be a part of it. I don't know, because like the fan base, Portland fan base, rightfully so, was like, we want to, and then they blamed him, and then like fucking Olshay handled it horribly at that press conference, and it was just kind of a shit show. And then as these things go, very distressingly so, like enough time goes by and people just forget, and it's just like, now he's the coach and now it's fine and everyone's like moving on. And unless there's like multiple updates, like we go through once a week with the Ben stuff, obviously very different, you just like settle in and this is the season. It's very odd. And it's weirdly like, is Dame's availability going to change based on like a credible accusation of sexual assault? It's such a strange fucking.
Well, especially
sports are so weird. Sports are so fucking weird.
Not that it changes that it was bad or not, but it was like, it was 25 years ago. Like, since that's happened, Chauncey Billups has played in the NBA, has been an assistant coach, has been a television analyst. To be like, Damian Lillard, you, who was a player on the team, you know, like that whole fucking thing was strange.
It's all very uncomfortable. And we we in media and we as a society, we in NBA, like just no one knows how to fucking handle it. And it's weird and it sucks. And like, then we talk about, obviously, what else are we going to talk about? Like the ramifications of it. And there was like a, you know, Henry Ruggs fucking like kills a person. And like now it's like, what is it? How does it impact his fantasy football status? It's just like, this is very weird. It's a weird world. It's very uncomfortable all the time.
You know, I don't know why people are struggling to like, I see so much stuff about the Ruggs stuff about like how this is such a shame for all parties involved. It's mostly a shame for the girl that died. You know, like yes. Henry Ruggs was driving 150 miles an hour with a blood alcohol level twice the legal limit. He's a fucking asshole and he killed a person. It's not a shame for him. He's an asshole and he killed a person. This is not a hard thing to parse. This was not like he slipped and fell and hurt somebody and now everybody feels bad. And like he's the asshole. There's not, he deserves to feel bad right now, you know. Before we get to the mailbag, boy, what a fucking weird pivot. Before we get to the mailbag, I'm home alone with my dog tonight. We're sitting watching the game. And as my dog occasionally does, he looks at me, he gets up, he prances across the living room, he goes upstairs and gets into his bed. Like an hour before the game was over, he just goes to bed. If you had a big barker, you'd go to bed like that too. It is the only real dog bed on the market for the, you treat your, put your dog in the fucking lap of luxury. Get your dog a bed that supports his joints. So you're going to be his or her joints. So they're going to be healthy for the rest of their lives. BigBarker.com/Ricky. BigBarker.com/Ricky. I'm looking for my process pup patches, my extra ones, but they're not here. The bed has been proven to improve the health of your dog. Penn Vet did a study and it proved it. And they've been doing it for years now. And I say Big Barker, and it was originally made for big dogs, but it is now for dogs of all sizes, even tiny little dogs. They have the Barker Jr. They have the bed with the headrest. They have the bed without the headrest. They have it in different colors. They have replaceable covers. It's just fucking beautiful. BigBarker.com/Ricky. 10-year warranty. The foam doesn't flatten or they replace it for free. 1 year at home trial. If you don't like it, they will pay for the refund and they will even pay for shipping. And it's handmade in the USA. Big Barker dog beds. Writes RickySanchez@gmail.com is the mailbag. Mike, this comes from Jeff. Is chanting "We want Lillard" actually loser shit?
No.
What do you think? You don't think it is?
Absolutely not. Absolutely.
As we dominate that team cheering for that player,
they started chanting it earlier in the game before the I thought it was really funny that they said everyone sucks and then Dame and they cheered for him and everything. I think that's funny. I think I like sort of organic crowd reactions to things that are generally positive. And I hate recycled crowd, like anyone chanting Trae Young's balding still is just like, we're so past it. It was very organic and funny and with the Knicks, and then everyone else doing it is just like posing and it sucks. But this is just like, it is A, funny, B, like indicative, like assigned to the Sixers, like, hey, like fucking come on, which fans are well within their rights to say. And like, just, hey, we want you to be here. And so much of it is of like, you know, Philadelphia has a bad reputation for, you know, a lot of it is bullshit, but in sometimes it's not around the league and in other sports, obviously, about like, oh, it's hard to play for them and they're, and all everything that everybody knows. And for Dame being like cheered and applauded several times during a game, and then to also lose that game to our fucking backups, I think taken all together, I think is beautiful and perfect. I think if the Sixers lost and they're chanting "We want Dame," that's a little bit like, yeah, well, you lost. Because they won and because it was worked out, like everybody knows we want Dame. Like obviously we do. And so why not chant it for him and why not make it funny and make it like put pressure on the team and make Lillard be like, hey, maybe I should play for those nice fans.
Do you remember we did that for Dwight Howard, though, years ago? Fans were cheering for Dwight to come here the year before his free agency.
I don't remember that at all.
Yeah, it definitely happened. I bet there's an article on the internet about it, actually.
This is different because I think, like, because he's been rumored for so long, and they're like, basically the thing keeping Dame from Philadelphia is him asking to come to Philadelphia. You know, like, that is the thing to do. It's not like if he was like, all right, I'm done here. This team sucks. Fuck Chauncey. Fuck all these other whatever. You fuck friggin' Tony Snell being the thing that's going to keep me here. Like, great offseason acquisition, bro. Although I do love Larry Nance. And he says, I'm out of here. Like, Sixers fans being like really nice to him, and fucking, you know, my buddy, former guest of this podcast, Doug Mann, seeing him in Italy and not saying, like, come to Philadelphia, just giving him a bottle of champagne and then not even mentioning the Sixers is wrong. And is right. This is fixing Doug's mistake, and he should know, like, would be beloved in Philadelphia. This idea of, like, Giannis did it in Milwaukee, like, if Giannis was drafted to, like, the Pacers and then traded after a year to Milwaukee and then won a championship, like, that wouldn't be less satisfying. It'd be the same amount of satisfying. Come to Philadelphia, you'll probably not win it year one, but maybe year two or year three, and then you'll feel like, I earned it. My city, my team, success. Fuck it. It's going to feel great to win a championship. And he's not going to win one in Portland. He's never going to win one in Portland. They won't do it. They're not good enough. The other guys are not good enough. The team, they're not going to get a good enough draft pick. They're just going to be like the 7-10 seed for the rest of his career, unless they get crazy lucky. And the Sixers are one Damian Lillard away from winning a championship in the next 3 years. And so
they have been to more conference finals than we have.
That is a point I don't want to hear right now. So I'm not acknowledging it, but
I
taken together, they would be, I think they would be close to, or the favorites in the East, because of Brooklyn not looking good and what's happened with Kyrie, because Milwaukee's got injuries, and, like, it's hard to win two in a row, I think. And I mean, maybe that Miami looks obviously very good, but I'd be very excited about the Sixers.
This player on Miami is playing pretty well, who I got crushed for saying that he might have more trade value than Ben Simmons.
Jimmy Butler?
No, different one. This comes from Storm. Hi, Spike and Mike. I grew up in South Jersey as a Philadelphia sports fan, and I've been fortunate to go to many Sixers games. I've always prided our fan base on being knowledgeable and passionate, and at Wells Fargo Center, we're engaged and loud. I moved from Philly to New York last year and finally got to Madison Square Garden for a Sixers-Knicks game this past Tuesday. I was astounded at how loud and reactive the fans at MSG were. There was a level of electricity I've only experienced during playoff games at Wells Fargo Center, and it undoubtedly factored into the Sixers' poor performance. I've always perceived Knicks fans as being more social and celebrity events. How do we account for this? Is it New York City boisterousness, MSG acoustics, or am I underestimating the passion of the Knicks fan base? Spike, as a supporter of both franchises, I'm especially curious about your take. Knicks fans, I've realized being up here, are just like Eagles fans.
Yeah.
They've always been diehard, and they sold out a long time, but they go from 0 to 60 like this. You know, like, they are, as far as I can tell, the most, like, passionate fans in New York. And this team hasn't been good in a long time.
Yeah.
So they're good. So they are chest thumping like fucking crazy. And it's obnoxious, but it's also kind of fun to watch. And I think it makes the atmosphere really cool. Like, they've been starved, and they're good basketball fans. And it's what, you know, when you look at it, you know, and you go, man, like, Durant and Harden, like, went to Brooklyn, like, that's why when you look at that crowd, you look at it and you go, oh shit, could you imagine if it was there? You know?
Sure.
I get that. I totally
get
it.
Yeah, for sure. I've never seen I saw a Knick game at the Garden. I saw a Syracuse game at the Garden, which was very cool. But never Knick game. Lipschitz last night actually said, like, it's different there than at the Wells Fargo Center. And I think it's because I think the Eagles comparison is the right one. It is clearly the number one, I would say them and probably the Yankees are a similar one team in town, but the Yankees have obviously won so much. that they're and it's a bifurcated fan base because of the Mets. There's just the Knicks are the team. It's like they're the number one show, and MSG has a ton of history and lore to it, and people feel excited when they're there. And the
it's
team
a
plays with
town, New York. And
the team
basketball
plays with
town.
Like a level of like fire to them that sometimes overcomes their like talent deficit. I mean, I think comparing it to the Eagles is right, and I think that the Sixers fan base, for you know, obviously not a monolith, but it's been a as like if the Knicks had a couple like big heartbreaks and like where they were the favorite and melted down or like never quite got over the hump, I think that some of that would go away. I think there a malaise and a frustration would set in for the Knicks right now, but they're still on the upswing and feeling like, you know, the whole world's in front of them. And for the Knicks, again, like I said this for years, all they have to do is be like good enough, and
it puts people them in will position.
Start to, people will start to come there. Like players are going to start to come there because the fan base is good, because it's in New York, because they're the biggest show in town, and all they have to do is be like reasonably competent. And now they are, and they're probably going to get somebody in the next year or so that will like make them some of the favorites in the East. Maybe it's Dame, which would suck.
And then finally, this comes from Jack from Australia, who, by the way, wrote that the first part of the email was about how Matisse Thybulle saved his Sixers fandom because he was disappointed by the other guy. He says, basketball question, which current Sixer would win in a boat race, which I guess is a beer chug race. That's what they call it in Australia. My sneaky bet is Niang. Little bit of chub. Europeans can drink, and he looks like he loves it. I doubt Joel would be able to handle the froth. You have a pick for Sixers beer chug race? Who would win?
Is he saying Niang is European? He's not European.
That's what he says.
His name is Senegal.
Oh, okay.
I think he was born here. He was born in Massachusetts.
There you go. It's close to Europe.
Yeah, it's basically Europe. I like the idea that it could be Niang. I feel like in really any competition, I would give it to Joel. He's not a drinker, but like I feel like if he had to do it, I feel like he would.
My pick,
and Niang's a good guess.
My pick is Thybulle. Spent 4 years in college. Definitely like is the like goes to the party. What's the beer thing? Like the like keg stand. Yeah. He's done that shit. I don't think so.
It's too thin. Doesn't have a point.
Yeah.
I could see it being like a B-ball Paul's either the best or the worst at it.
I would pick worst. Then non-basketball question. I loved this the other day. So please try again using these Aussie terms in a sentence. Budgie smugglers. Mike, would you like to use budgie smugglers in a sentence?
I feel like that's boobs. That's my guess.
Wow, look at those budgie smugglers would be
the
sentence.
Oh, I don't need to do the sentence. I don't know. Okay.
Okay. Jaden Lesky.
That's a name of someone that they went to elementary school with.
Okay, so that's not even a thing. Dead horse. Now, it can't be the dead horse that we talk about, right?
The common phrase.
Yeah.
I think it might just mean tired.
Dead horse. Yeah, I don't know. Little, and two more. Little Rippa. Little Rippa. I can't do it. That Aussie impression.
A fart.
A fart. And finally, up the Hillary. It's got to be up the butt, right? I mean, you know, right?
There you go.
Do we play the Bulls again?
We got Detroit.
Okay.
Detroit, I think it's tomorrow. And then the Bulls again on Saturday. Yeah.
Okay.
Detroit tomorrow. Would be nice to keep Embiid to like a 22 minute or not playing him at all.
Well, Detroit's fucking terrible. So
they're really bad. And Cade is taking a long time to get healthy. Doesn't look right yet. I will say, I think the jerseys and the court are look gorgeous. Great. I think they're great. Incredible. I think it's always loved the Spectrum. The paneling is incredible. I thought the shorts, the logo on the shorts is great. I think the whole thing is very cool. I think the aesthetic in the promotional materials is cool. Way better than New Philadelphia.
Yeah.
It's really nice.
Yeah, they nailed that one. I have to give them credit for that one. They definitely nailed that one. It did look great. Absolutely. All right. We will we'll talk to you next time. Are you down with TTP?
Yeah. You? No. Clear face.
If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you. If you don't fuck with me, then I won't fuck with you. But if you fuck with me,
I'm gonna fucking kill you!
That's a plan B.